Seminary, anything connected with Dallas Seminary, I shouldn't need to point out who they are. It's not that they won't believe in a local church, but in practice, what you normally find over here are people associated with this. And in the parachurch ministries, which, by the way, we support parachurch ministries, is that correct? Tim Durham, what parachurch ministry would we support? Would you have any idea? Parachurch ministry literally just means something alongside the church or the local church. How about Baptist World Mission? We support a lot of their missionaries. They are an agency that we work with. They work with us to help get missionaries to the field. Maranatha Baptist University, Bob Jones University, these are places that are not part of our church. Now, they would not teach this, by the way. I mean, they would not be this either. They would be where we are, which would hold to both a universal church. Plus local churches. And the universal church would simply mean all the people that are saved, regardless of what church they're in. It would be all the people saved, in my view, from Pentecost to the rapture. But we would hold to both of those. So we would appreciate other Christians that aren't part of our local church. It's not me, us three. But we would hold firmly to the concept of a local church. So is everybody with me? So anybody associated with Dallas Seminary, you can read their books. I've read them. And they'll have a book on the church and almost never talk about a local church. Never talk about how it's structured. Never talk about how it functions. It's just the church. And a lot of times that doesn't mean all those men are this way. Sometimes it gets really extreme where people in parachurch ministries do not go to church. And I have been around many of those in my years, especially when I was younger, because they don't need to go to church. Hey, they serve in their little mission board, or they serve in their little Child Evangelism Fellowship, or all kinds of things like that. Now, again, we're not talking about specifics. Talking about in general, there are people on this extreme. So you have two extremes. I think most of us would hold something to this. A universal church, all of God's people, but yet local churches. Then we have talked about over the last few weeks, the local church, which I'm going to abbreviate. The local church is And who would like to tell me outside of Rhonda what this is? Because I don't want Rhonda speaking again. Someone other than Rhonda. Anybody? Tim?
Led by the pastors, bishops, elders, served by the deacons, is governed by the saints.
By the members, by the saints. And that's where we're going this morning. Okay, good. Very nice. All right, we are on, and if you have notes, we are on the second page of your notes. We're going to look at this real quickly and go down the list. And we'll come to some things. By the way, is this real hard to remember? Wow, I don't think so. Now, before I go any further, I need to tell all of you this. I went to Bible college at Hiles Anderson College, Bible College, and no one one time in a Bible, supposedly Baptist Bible college, ever mentioned church government. But why wouldn't they mention church government? Well, yeah, plus it was run by one person, plus hardest part is this. They could not defend from the Bible what they were doing even close. And by the way, and most people don't care. Most people are this. They didn't care how it was run. Are you with me? They just didn't care. So look, I'm being trained for the ministry. I never have one class on this in Bible college. Well, then I went to seminary at a Presbyterian school. So everything I'm teaching you is stuff I had to learn the hard way because I never was taught at any place, ever. The big number one is the local church is led by the pastors, elders, and I prefer overseers as opposed to bishops because bishops is just not, it has connotations that you do not want to use. I would never look at Tom Lex back there and say, he is a gay fella. But yet when we were kids, that would have been normal language. Why don't you use the language? Because it has a connotation that you don't want to associate. So you would never call a Baptist pastor a bishop. Why? Really, it's not what the Greek word means. And worse, it has connotations that are wrong. All it means is someone that oversees the flock. That's all it means. So I've touched on a couple of things. The local church leaders are called by three names. The three names focus on three what? Yes. The first name we are called, it's pretty common in the New Testament. It's the second most common, is overseer, episkopos. He is one. The function is overseeing the flock. We've talked about that. B is elder, which focuses on leading the flock. And this is, of course, the most common. Everyone look at me without looking at your notes. Why is it the most common? It's found in every major writer. Luke uses it, Paul uses it, Peter uses it, James uses it. Now, there's a few other words that the author of Hebrews uses, some different language that Paul uses in 1 Thessalonians 5, but this is very common language. Presbyteros, which simply means elder. Elder sometimes just means old person. They don't have a word uber elder, like uber presbyteros, like Frenchy. They don't have that kind of a word, but it could just mean older person, but in this case it means someone mature in the faith that can lead God's people. C is the word that normally we choose to call what Pastor Koch and I and Brian Steinbach and Dada does. We are pastors, though this is very uncommon in the New Testament. Okay? So we're going to try to actually deal with the Bible as opposed to opinions. In the Bible, how many times, anybody raise your hand, don't look at your notes, how many times is what I am called a pastor? How many times? Stacy, every church you've ever been in, I'm called a pastor, right? Or brother. Well, that's a Southern thing, and that's fine. Why? How many times is it used? Anybody know? None. One time, Ephesians 4. That's it. Now, a couple times the verbal form is used, but actual as a pastor, one time. By the way, what's the word pastor mean without looking at your notes? Pandoc. Can you quote Psalm 23, verse 1 in Spanish? What's it in English? The Lord is my shepherd. What's it in Spanish? I said Spanish. I don't know what you just said. Jehová es mi pastor. Yes, because normally the word pastor is translated shepherd, because that's the roots of it. It comes from a word that means to shepherd people. Like you would the sheep, you make sure the sheep get fed. That's what a pastor's job is. In your notes, we've already covered this. The verbal form is found in these passages, except Ephesians 4. In Acts 20, it says, and from Miletus he sent to Ephesus. By the way, C is feeding the flock. I think this is where we left off, feeding the flock. The Apostle Paul calls the elders, because normally they're called elders. And then in verse 28, he talks to this group of elders, and he says, take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock. I put the Greek there not to impress you, but it's related to the word shepherd and the verbal form to feed. It's from that same word. So take heed to yourself and to all the flock over the which the Holy Ghost has made you an episkopos, an overseer, plural. And then this is the verbal form, to feed the church of God. So you have my functions. I am a leader, an elder. I am an overseer, and I am one who feeds the flock. Those are the functions of a pastor. Ephesians 4 is the only place that uses the word pastor or shepherd as a noun for what I do. It says in Ephesians 4:11, and he gave some, and I have Greek there for a very, very specific reason. He gave some apostles, some prophets, some euangelistas, some evangelists, and then he combines two terms, and some pastors and teachers. Most people believe meaning that's the same thing. Pastor, that means teacher. Pastor, even teacher, because that is the function of a pastor. 1 Peter 5 also talks about the same thing. Under that, I say this is normally translated shepherd. So if you want to know, this is how the noun is normally translated. And in the New Testament, it normally refers to Jesus. I am the shepherd of the sheep. I am the good shepherd. That's where you normally find that at. Verse 14 of John, I am the good shepherd again. One shepherd. Hebrews 13 talks about that great shepherd of the sheep. 1 Peter 2:25 says, for you were sheep as going astray, but is now returned unto the shepherd and the overseer of your souls. So this group, a local church, is led by the pastors, the overseers, the elders, plural. All of this is plural. And pastors is, of course, focusing on, so you get the three functions of a pastor: overseeing, leading, the maturity factor, leading people, and the concept of feeding people. And that's kind of what we do. So let's look at some more ideas. I think we'll take time because we'll talk about, in the last 30 years, not 30 years, probably the last, since about 1995 to 2000, there's been a movement among younger fundamentalists away from what I'm talking about. So most of you won't have questions, but Amy will have questions. So we're going to go right after the elephant, because they say churches ought not to be governed by the people. They ought to be governed by the elders. And the elders are, they ought to make all decisions, and they have all, this takes all kinds of permutations. So I don't believe that. In your notes, under the verses, I say each leader, meaning each pastor, elder, overseer, fulfills all three functions. All three functions. Now, why am I saying this? Somebody tell me why I am saying this from a Presbyterian / elder-run organization. Emily, do you know? Yes, in a typical Presbyterian background, they're going to have two kinds of elders: teaching elder and ruling elder. Now, this has been around a long time. For everyone's information, this is not new. But Presbyterianism, of course, is bigger than that, because you also have things above the local church where they gather together, and I don't want to get into synods and all of that sort of thing. It's not significant for us. They have two different kinds of elders. Now, the teaching elder would be someone like myself, someone that went to seminary, someone that has an education for pastoring. He's the one that teaches and that sort of thing. But the people that make decisions in the church, and normally Presbyterian churches vary from place to place, but the elders, the ruling elder, actually makes all decisions of all kinds. And the people don't generally make too many decisions. And some of this it operates somewhat like a board, where basically your goal as a person is to get on this elder board or rule, you know, to become a ruling elder. The second kind of system like this, anybody. I've already said Dallas Seminary is this way. Where do they get it from? Wow, and this influences a lot of young people. John MacArthur does this. John MacArthur's church, which, by the way, I like John MacArthur, so this is not a negative. We're talking facts as opposed to hating and all that nonsense. John MacArthur does not have, he's not a Presbyterian, but he has an elder board. And each elder, and according to him, is equal. And there are, now they have several teaching elders in that church. And then they have ruling elders, and according to him, they're all equal. And as I always say, and anybody that knows, do you know who John MacArthur is? As I always say, and I'm very cynical, I quote the most biblical verse you've ever read. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And in John MacArthur's church, all elders are equal, but some elders are more equal than others, and John MacArthur runs the church. But that's how they run it. Now, who else does this? Does anybody know? Thank you. And why do they do this? Somebody. Do you not know where this comes from? Where does dispensationalism come from the sky? Comes from the Plymouth Brethren movement. And the brethren always were run by this same kind of thing. You had a teaching elder, you had ruling elders. In some of their background, the teaching elder was not paid, which is a very unbiblical thing, but that's what they did. So they really all worked secular jobs in one of them. Somebody that came through this church came from this background by the name of... Wow. Sam Augustine. Do you not know he was saved and grew up in a brethren church? And Sam would still be part of that. This is the first Baptist church he ever came to where a pastor was trained. That is the brethren movement. And it was very strong in a couple of places. One place is India. Where do they get that from? Let's not avoid the elephant. 1 Timothy 5. 1 Timothy 5. First Timothy 5, everybody find it? Frenchie, read it for us. Verse 17 and verse 18.
I don't have 18, I have 17 and 19.
Frenchie, I didn't want you to read them off your notes. I wanted you to read them from the Bible. Okay. Who has it? Rhonda, you have it.
17.
Yes. Now, there's a lot of things we can say about verse 17 and verse 18. But verse 17 says, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor. Frenchie, what does honor mean in that passage? Why would you think that? What does honor mean? So if I honor somebody, I got to pay them? Verse 18 is talking about money. Yes, thank you. That's one of those really deep things. It is talking about paying somebody. And also verse 3, look at verse 3, honor widows that are widows indeed. Folks, when it says honor widows, it's not talking about pay them lots of respect. It's talking about the local church. Well, first of all, the family. And if the family is not able or not present, then the local church takes over honoring widows that are widows indeed. And by the way, we're not talking about being nice to them. We're talking about helping them out. Honor is a word that in Greek also is the same word for price or value. So how do they get to anybody? Raise your hand and tell me from verse 17 where they get two groups from. So you have some who rule and some who don't. Thank you. And how would you know that an elder rule well? Well, that's in the second part of the verse. Especially they who what? So a lazy pastor should get paid what he's worth. But since we live in a communist a democratic world where everybody's equal and the people on the bottom, we should be giving them from our tax money to help them get up. We do the same thing every place. By the way, if you're lazy, you should get paid what you're worth. That goes for pastors too. And if you can't figure out who's lazy and who's not, it's not talking about two kinds of elders. Well, it is talking about two kinds of elders. Lazy ones and those who labor. That's what it's talking about. But it's not talking about two different kinds of people. But this is the verse they use. And I got a whole book on it upstairs if you'd like to dive into it and do this after a while. You're just like, woo. Actually, the author after a while gives up on this verse and he says, well, it doesn't really teach that. But the Old Testament teaches that, and you're like, the church in the Old Testament again. It's always the same thing. By the way, folks, look at me. An elder in this church has the same basic functions, teaching, overseeing, and leading. So if we have four pastors, that's their job. Their job is not sleeping. We don't have four kinds of pastors. You know, one guy that's the janitor, one guy who's the bus driver, and then one guy in charge. That's a Hiles view. No, pastors are pastors. This is clear. Pastors do the same kind of work. Now, Dada right now does not get paid from our church. He has a secular job. I don't think that's unbiblical. In the history of Baptists, we have done lots of that. But his function in this church and through this church is the same as Tim's, mine, and Brian's. That's the way we function. And right now he's lazy too, but that's beside the point. I had to say that, Dada. I'm sorry. All right. He's not. In your notes, so each leader fulfills all the functions. The local church normally has a plurality of elders. Normally, there is a plurality of elders. Meaning there's, what does that mean? There's more than one. And when I say more than one, again, we have to keep repeating because most of what we believe, if we're honest, comes from tradition. So whatever your tradition is, if you grew up with a pope and you said, yeah, well, they had an assistant pastor, and what was the assistant pastor's role? Well, he's the kind of guy that could not preach a sermon if his life depended on it. I remember one time, the First Baptist of Hammond, the assistant pastor preached. It was the worst sermon I ever heard in my entire life. Look at me, I'm not exaggerating. And the sermon became legendary, it was so bad. But he was an assistant pastor. So what you do is, when you're a Baptist pope, and you know every group has its stupidities, you get a bunch of flunkies under you that cannot function, but they are good for taking out the trash, cutting the grass, you know, that kind of thing. And there is no. That's not what we're looking for. By the way, everybody knows, and we're not a big crowd this morning, but we can talk about this. Brian Steinbach, when he came on board, do you know what the requirements were for him to come here? Anybody know? Raise your hand if you know. Amy, what do you think? He had to go to Central Seminary. Rule number one, I don't want any dumb pastors. Why would I want uneducated people under me? Second rule is 5 years, but you didn't know about that one. Look, folks, we're not trying to have dumb people, I'm the big shot, everybody else is stupid. That is, well, there's a lot of that that goes on. So the local church normally has a plurality of elders. Now, as I say in your notes, this does not require, and I'm going to use real cute language. You'll only run into this word in this discussion. Parity or an exact equality. So this is not singing Kumbaya and thinking that Pastor Koak, Pastor Warren, Pastor Steinbach, and Pastor Hippolito are all exactly equal. Somebody's going to be a bigger mouth. Don't talk about Noel like that. Somebody's going to be older. He's got, you know, there's going to be differences. You, by the way, I always like it when Christians get together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya like we're all equal. You take this group right here, put you 1,000 miles away, start a church, guess who the leader's going to be after a short period of time? Leaders are going to rise. It's just the nature of people. There is no such thing as equality in the Kumbaya kind of world or in the all animals are equal kind of world. I read that book in our Bible every other year, in case you don't know, to teach children how to think. Because the funniest thing about the book is, if you've never read Animal Farm, you ought to read it. It is hilarious. The more I read it, the more laughing I have. Because we try to make all animals equal, but animals are different. It's only Barack Obama that thinks all animals are the same. And you know, birds can fly, donkeys can't. By the way, males are males and women are not. Thank God. What's wrong with our perverted country? We think equality means we all got to be the same? Really? Wow. There's never going to be a total perfect equality. Now, if I give you examples of that, there are many examples of that. You know, the Apostle Paul always had a group he worked with. Is that correct? Now, do you reckon that they were all equal? In some ways, absolutely, yes. They all did the same things. But do you think that maybe Paul might have been the... I mean, it just, that's going to happen, and that's normal, and that's good, and that's not wrong. as long as we don't get this kind of effect, you know, the Pope and the little peons down here at the bottom, glorified janitors. That's not what we're looking for. And if you don't believe that Pastor Kwok doesn't lead, it's only because you're sleeping, and you're really sleeping. I would be curious to know from some of you how much you think I interfere with what he does. Zero. No, because I don't want to. Same with Amy. I mean, I don't do that sort of thing, folks. Now, Brian comes to me and talks to me, but I'm not the Pope. Yeah, I'm the old man, but that's it. In the New Testament also, you will find in the book of Acts, you're going to find, even though he was also an apostle, a guy by the name of James, Jesus' half-brother, seemed to be the guy, kind of the whatever you want to call him in Jerusalem. That doesn't mean everybody else was a peon. It just means that's the way it works. So when we say there's a plurality of elders, that doesn't mean that they're all exactly this. And you say, why not? I don't even think that's possible. You put 10 people together, somebody's going to become the leader. You might have 2 people become the leader, then you have a civil war. Or the other ones aren't willing to work with them. All right, we continue. Does this make sense to all of you? Kind of. So as opposed to what was practiced at Lake County Baptist before I came, which was primarily a one-pastor show, though many of you maybe didn't recognize that, and there's only a few here that were even here then, I don't believe in a one-man show. You say, well, you're the big shot. Yes, but when I'm gone, I'm very comfortable letting him preach, letting Noel preach. They're leaders. They know how to handle the Word of God. And if they didn't, why would they be a pastor? All right, in your notes. This also does not mean an elder form of church government. Doesn't mean an elder form of church government. I'm going to try to put this on the board so we can discuss this. When I say it doesn't mean an elder form of church government, how does an actual church function? Well, there's, I've already illustrated it this way. I believe the pastor, the old guy, and the group that works with him, how many ever these guys are, I look at this more, and I don't want to say military terms and conquering countries, but in the sense that we are going someplace. And behind them, the church is going with them. And the deacons are, of course, called alongside, and they do, and all of our deacons do this, and a lot of folks who aren't deacons do this as much as the ones who are deacons. They serve alongside to help the church continue where it's going. How does a church make decisions? If you're in a pure congregational church, literally, I've seen this, the church actually, they have a budget meeting every month. There's people here that would like that. And they talk about the budget. How much should we spend on toilet paper? How much should we spend on plowing of snow? Do you know how much we spend on plowing of snow? How much ever we need to spend on plowing of snow? Churches aren't really secret. I think there's a form of church government which the congregation runs the church to such a degree that the church is usually 30 people and they don't usually ever do anything because everybody's arguing about budgets. There's other forms of church government. This is one extreme. There's other forms where literally one man dictates down to the group. There's other forms where you have some sort of a board. Now, in a Presbyterian, that is both the teaching elder and ruling elders. That's one form. In some churches, that is the what? It's the deacon. They call it a deacon board, which you probably never hear me call it deacon board unless it's accidental. Because board implies what you get at work. Who's the big shot? Who's the little shot? I love the deacons in this church. They're a wonderful group. But I see the deacons, and they are, in the Bible sees them, as servants of the church, not as people that run the place. Now, in our church, do the people make decisions? Yes. Anytime there is some kind of decision, if this is the church, what you basically have in our church is somewhat like this. You have the elders working not with a board, but with the deacons. And if the church, if it's something outside of the normal stuff we do, do you understand normal stuff we do? Pay the electricity, pay the heat, mow the grass. You know, anything outside of that, the pastors, elders, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it with these guys, and it's going to come before the church, and the church is going to make the decision. That's how we work. And to me, it makes sense. We don't want to come up here and say, now, what kind of a lawnmower would you like to buy? Do you understand what's wrong with that, by the way? And a bigger problem is, what are the deacons for? Aren't the deacons supposed to be serving and assisting the church? Shouldn't we kind of not make the decisions, but try to talk about that? Of course, our deacons, we have one deacon. I won't mention his name. He's an evil deacon. We have one evil deacon. He just buys the lawnmower, so we never have to worry about that. I won't say who that is. In your notes, I'll just say this and move on. Pastors are always leading, discussing. Pastors are always leading, discussing, and mentoring and assisting in decisions. So it's not that the pastor is not involved in the process. You know, if you look at a process of making decisions, I believe a pastor is to be involved. He doesn't say, well, that's a decision of the church. I don't have anything to do with it. No, the pastors are still leading, discussing, talking about things. The deacons are coming alongside. We discuss all these things. And we bring before the church anything that's outside the normal processes. The church is going to have to vote on that. That's the way this place works. It's the way a church is supposed to work. Questions? Nothing. Amy. They don't. Well, they're always run by usually a guy that's very powerful and a small group of board of some, they might call them elders. And usually what that happens is in most of those, because mega churches aren't really governed by scripture, so they don't really care about some of this. What's that mean? I have no idea. That's outside the purview of the Bible, so I would have no comment. It sounds who? Galactic. I don't know, Emmy. I would say that most churches don't pay attention to what the Bible says about church government. And I'm also a fan of local churches. And these start to lose the flavor of local churches and take on other things. Some are worse than others. Yes, sir.
I grew up in a Presbyterian church. They call it a session board. Is that the same thing, or where does that come?
Presbyterians have always had things above, and they're not all evil. They're not all of the devil. We don't need to make people ugly. But they do not believe the local church is an entity in and of itself. They believe there's a local church, and then above that, and they call them sessions, and then they have like three layers, I think. But I'm not a Presbyterian, so I don't know. They call, and they use that. So what if a local church gets in trouble? Where does it go? Well, that's one of the problems we have in our circles. If a local church gets in trouble, but Presbyterians are no different. I mean, local churches, any group that has something above it, after a while they can just say, we don't like your decision, we're going over here. But normally they do that for protection and stuff. And the more biblical ones, the PCA, which is pretty good on the whole, doctrinally anyhow, Presbyterian Church in America. I'm being very specific, out of Covenant Seminary where I went. They run where they discuss things, and I like that. I like it where pastors from other churches come together and discuss doctrine, teaching, new problems that we face that we haven't faced before. Some of that is honestly is what they're doing, but they do see this as, did you have things above? What did you guys call them when you... Presbytery is like the top level, I think. But see, I can't remember. The session might just be the local one, and then there's a, I don't know. And then there's a problem. See, the reason I can't tell you is at Covenant Seminary, we also had Christian Reformed, and they have the exact same thing, but they call them different names, and I get confused which is who. But they do have like three levels or something. It doesn't come from the Bible, but and Baptists wouldn't like it. But then I don't always like what Baptists do, where we don't talk to other pastors and we just kind of go it alone and we're our own person. We don't talk to anybody. And as Tim knows very well, we have those around too, which now we have a group of guys, as you well know, that we associate with that we discuss everything, or not everything, but many good things which are important. These are good questions. Good questions. All right, in your notes are some of the other ways on the next, I think it's on the next page. Hebrews 13, we've already talked about this. Also, it doesn't really give the leaders of the local church a title. It just calls them which have the rule over you. But as we said last week, there's nothing wrong with saying that as long as you then explain what it means to rule over someone. And that is found in the text, not in what a pastor thinks his job is. So a pastor does have an element of authority, but it says, who have spoken into you the word of God through his preaching and teaching. And then it says, whose faith follow, considering the end, and that means the outcome of their King James conversation, their lifestyle. So, you know, a pastor has authority by his preaching and teaching. He has authority by his example, whose faith follow. He has some authority from the product of what he's teaching and preaching. And then, of course, verse 13 says, obey, which is a very different word. It is the word that means to persuade. The best way that I can think of explaining this is, you as a member ought to be, allow yourself to be persuaded to follow those who are over you. It's not a coercive thing. It is a persuaded thing. And may I say this? In my life, no one's going to tell me what to do. I have to be persuaded. And if you can persuade me, I'm going there. And a pastor's job is to persuade. Now, folks, do not get angry at me. Older people this age never grew up around persuasion. It was shut up and set down in most every place. Even my age was a lot that way. So if you're even in your 50s to your 80s in this room, you never really ask questions much. Amy's generation, much more question generation. Older pastors don't do well with that. My whole ministry, I like to persuade. I'm not trying to coerce anybody. My problem is then I preach to people who have never had to think about anything. Now, I'm going to say this.